News. It's now 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Brady Carlson in for Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Every year, New Hampshire lawmakers debate whether to expand gambling, and in each year's discussions, the arguments sound familiar. Backers say a casino would bring jobs and new state revenue without raising or creating taxes. Opponents argue a casino would hurt other sectors of the economy, such as tourism, while leading to increases in gambling addiction or crime. But each year's debate is slightly different. For the first time in recent memory, New Hampshire's governor supports the idea of a casino. The state has developed a more thorough framework for how it would regulate gaming, and there's new urgency for supporters as Massachusetts moves forward with its own casino plans. These and other elements have changed the debate over gambling in New Hampshire, but so far the outcome has stayed the same, with the state Senate approving a number of gambling bills when House lawmakers voting them down. The latest Senate-passed bill is heading to the House with a new provision to restore a revenue-sharing program, which promises millions of dollars in aid to towns. But it remains to be seen whether this enticement will build new enthusiasm around gambling or whether casino backers will once again have to hope for better luck next year. Today in The Exchange, the latest odds for expanded gambling in the Granite State, and let's hear from you. Where do you come down on casinos in New Hampshire? What conditions or provisions, if any, would make you look at the issue differently? What questions do you have about this latest bill? The Exchange phone number, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can email us comments and questions, exchange@nhpr.org, or you can send us your thoughts on Facebook. Joining us in the studio today is Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Public Policy Studies, which put out a study last year looking at expanded gambling in the state. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks much.
Senator Lou D'Alessandro is a Democrat of Manchester. He has sponsored many bills to expand gambling in New Hampshire. Welcome back to you as well.
Thanks, Brady. Great to be here on this great American day.
And Patricia Lovejoy is a Democratic state representative from Stratham who opposes the current gambling bill. Welcome to The Exchange to you as well.
Thank you, Brady. Thank you for having me.
I mentioned at the outset that each year's debate sounds familiar, but there are different elements. I'll start with you, Senator D'Alessandro. What's different here, even given that the state House has already looked at a Senate-passed gambling bill earlier in the session and has already voted it down? What's different now?
Well, I think a number of things are different. Obviously, you have the results of a number of commissions that have been put together, and you have a bill that's gone iteration after iteration after iteration in terms of responding to all of those who think this should be done and that should be done and this should be done and that should be done. So we've made all of these changes, and hopefully we have a piece of legislation that can pass the House Ways and Means Committee. You know, not an easy task. I think we lost 11-9 on another bill. Actually, it was a House bill, and I think last year was 23-22. So we're getting closer, and I think there's an urgency. Obviously, your statement about what's happened in Maine, what's happening in Massachusetts, is important to us. Both of those venues, the Maine venue is up and running. The Massachusetts venues will be up and running shortly. And it's an opportunity for New Hampshire to have some economic recovery, some job creation, and hopefully we'll get some positive results from the House.
Representative Lovejoy, the calculus has always been, as the House goes, so goes the gambling debate. Do you see that urgency in your body? Do you see an urgency building around a casino or a particular casino plan?
No, I don't. I don't think there's going to be much of a difference than the vote that we just took about a month ago. This bill has some additional enticements to get legislators to vote for it. And they're promises, but they're really, in many ways, hollow promises because no legislature can bind a future legislature. This bill adds $25 million for revenue sharing, basically reinstating revenue sharing. When the next budget is done, the members of the Ways and Means and the Finance Department, Finance Division, will be putting together a budget, and they will look at what the needs of the state are at that time, whether the $25 million for revenue sharing stays in 4 or 5 years from now when we finally have money from a casino. If one were to go through, that legislature would decide on it. The other enticement was to deal with proliferation. There's a lot of members of the House that are very concerned about if you have one casino, you will get more. There's no state that has only one casino. The bill we dealt with a month ago had one casino. This one has two, but there's a provision that says there will only be two, and it after 10 years you could potentially have another one, but it would take two-thirds of the House. We cannot tell a House, or both the House and Senate, several years from now, that they're going to have two-thirds. Just like when the BET was put in place in the early 90s, it said there would need to be two-thirds vote of the legislature in order to raise it. Well, when they went to raise it in 1999 on a majority vote, they did away with the two-thirds. So it's a feel-good. It's a feel-good provision to get others that are concerned about proliferation to vote for the bill.
Let's take a look at each of these, as you called them, enticements. Steve Norton, can we talk a little bit about revenue sharing, exactly how that works with cities and towns, how the state sends that money, and then what it's aimed to do and how that actually works out?
Yeah, well, revenue sharing is really a deal that the state cut with the municipalities for some changes that occurred a while ago. And that was revenue sharing was eliminated as part of the 2011 budget process because of the recession and declining revenues. But what it did essentially is distribute money to communities based on a formula that favored particularly those mill towns that had financial difficulty like Berlin, Claremont, and Manchester and the like. And that same formula would be implemented with this new bill. And to the extent revenue was available, as the representative has indicated, would be distributed back to the communities.
And so this one would offer just north of $25 million.
That's correct. Yep. 25.2, I believe.
Right, 25.2 million. Actually, revenue sharing began in the late 1960s when Walter Peterson's task force on taxes, which was chaired by Royden Sanders, came up with a new methodology for taxation. The stock and trade tax, or the old inventory tax, was eliminated, and in place of it came the business profits tax. And the deal that was made with the communities was they would share, hence the term revenue sharing. And the revenue sharing has been at about $25.2 million for a number of years before it was suspended. And when you go to the towns, they say, gee, this is something that we were promised. The promise has been negated by the legislature. As Representative Lovejoy points out, the legislature does what it believes it has to do, and it suspended revenue sharing. And this particular piece of legislation reinstitutes revenue sharing. But it's a promise that was made a long time ago, hasn't been fulfilled for the last few years, and really should be fulfilled because it is something that was in law for a long period of time and came about as a result of that tax commission that was put together by Governor Walter Peterson.
And what do you make of that concern that Representative Lovejoy mentioned, that the legislature could reinstitute it, but it could also take it away, and the casino would still be there. The towns may feel like they were promised yet again to have this revenue sharing, and now they're saddled with a casino that they may or may not have wanted when the revenue sharing was reinstituted.
Well, the legislature, in its wisdom, has the power to do what it has to do every 2 years. Hopefully, revenue sharing, once it's reinstated, will remain in place because it's a key element in the economic viability of a community, and it should be maintained. I know I visit my communities, and they ask me about revenue sharing. I say, well, it was eliminated in the budget process, and we're going to try to restore it. But as the representative points out, listen, the legislature can do anything. I mean, they legislate. That's what they're there for. And you got 400 in the House, third largest legislative body in the English-speaking world, and that body does what it does. I was a member of the House. I can give you examples of the House doing some crazy things. But in addition to that, it is what it is. And hopefully the House would respond to what the people want. And the people are in favor of expanded gambling. I mean, poll after poll after poll indicates that the populace favors expanded gaming. And yet we have an area of representation. The House represents, what, one for every 3,000 people. And yet the will of the people seems to be discarded, and the legislature can do that too.
Representative Lovejoy, that is one of the arguments you hear often, that the poll showed New Hampshire is all right with a casino, and the State House does not appear to be.
I think each legislator looks at the issue of casinos, just like whether it was marijuana expansion, marijuana decriminalization, each legislator looks at the issue and decides what they think is best. When you're looking at polls, the polls in New Hampshire say overwhelmingly that the citizens want marijuana to be decriminalized. Yet the Senate just last week did not pass decriminalization. So it works in many areas. So each legislature is looking at it as what they think is best.
Today on The Exchange, a look at what's in the cards for expanded gambling in New Hampshire. After a number of unsuccessful attempts to pass a casino bill, supporters are hoping they may finally have a winning hand. We're looking at this latest bill and its odds for passing. We invite you to join us. The Exchange phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Steve Norton, I wanted to give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, just one thing about polls. It's when you ask someone if they want to have something in the state, they will often say yes in the abstract. But when you ask them very specifically about something in their community, they might not say yes. In fact, we've discovered in Massachusetts that while the state generally favors expanded gambling, the communities themselves have been balking over the introduction of gambling in the community. So the state might in general believe that, but might not want it in their backyard, so to speak.
And in fact, we've seen some of that in the legislature. You've seen, I remember in last year's debate over casinos, that there were some lawmakers who voted against the bill, even though they supported the idea of a casino because they didn't want one. There are other lawmakers who say they don't want more than one. And Governor Hassan has said she prefers to have one casino. And then there are other lawmakers who are in favor of any and all of the above or none or none of the above.
That's
so
right.
That's another piece of the calculus then.
Well, that's how it's been working out. But communities that have taken votes on whether or not they want expanded gaming, Salem voted 80% in favor of expanded gaming. Seabrook has voted for expanded gaming. Belmont has voted for expanded gaming. So when the local communities have an opportunity to participate, they vote overwhelmingly in favor of expanded gaming.
We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion of expanded gambling proposals in New Hampshire. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. This is The Exchange.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 919. Good morning. You can make sure your membership gift to NHPR goes as far as it can with our corporate match program. Many businesses around the state match your employees' donations to NHPR. You can essentially double the impact of your membership gift. Find out if your company participates at nhpr.org. More on what's ahead for expanded gambling in New Hampshire on The Exchange at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show. We'll take a look at the booming business of legalized marijuana. New Hampshire weather, partly to mostly sunny today, high temperatures in the mid to upper 60s. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Derry Medical Center, an independent family practice celebrating 50 years of primary care for entire families with offices in Derry, Londonderry, and Wyndham. DerryMedicalCenter.com. And from Ascoma Savings Bank, serving the people and needs of the Upper Connecticut River Valley since 1899, online at MascomaBank.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Today on The Exchange, we're looking at a new proposal to legalize a casino in New Hampshire. Call in at 1-800-892-6477 or send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Twitter or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Joining us today is Steve Norton, Executive Director of New Hampshire Public Policy Studies, Lou D'Alessandro, a Democratic State Senator from Manchester, and Patricia Lovejoy, a Democratic State Representative from Stratham. And I wanted to give Representative Lovejoy a chance to respond to what we were talking about just as we came up to the break there about the towns and communities that have voted in favor of bringing a casino to the state and potentially to their community as well.
Well, this bill, just like the one that we had earlier, has once again an enticement to the local communities. The host community, the way this bill is written, would get 3% of our 35% from slot machines, which works out to about, I think it's 8.5% of the total state's take prior to any expenses, which is a pretty significant pretty significant amount, considering that the local community would also be getting now revenue sharing, and they would be getting the property taxes from the $450 million investment that the casino would have to put in. So there's a lot of enticements. Whether or not, once again, when the money started to come in, that the legislature would change those percentages, I think it's very realistic that they would probably change, because 8.5% off the top prior to any expenses to the local community is a pretty significant amount.
We have a number of callers on the line. The exchange number, once again, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Diana is calling in from Concord. Hi, Diana. You're on the exchange.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to raise a point here, because a lot of the casino opponents that I've listened to have used the excuse that over the years we still get to patch together a responsible budget. But as the president of the state employees union and a more than 20-year employee of the state, I've had the opportunity to have a bird's-eye view of what our legislature has been doing over the years. We have faced more than a dozen class action lawsuits over the past 30 years for underfunding services or our obligations. We have left our most vulnerable children without care or proper care. We have left the educationally challenged children without proper education. We have left public school children without proper funding for education, for not one but two class action lawsuits, the mentally ill, female prisoners. We have gutted the pension system for over 70,000 people. We have taken over $125 million in budget cuts and laid off or eliminated almost 2,000 full-time jobs. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. That doesn't include the hospitals that we cut, the doctors that we took the money from, the JUA, from the Joint Underwriting Association, the Medicaid Enhancement Tax, child care, residential facilities, and the list just goes on. So as part of this debate, I would like casino opponents to prove to us that we don't need this revenue. And though it may be a drop in the bucket, for those of us who have not had the luxury of being distanced from the harm that these cuts over the decades have made, I would ask them to prove to us that we don't need this money.
This would be Diana Lacey of the State Employees Association, if I recognize the voice, and thank you for your call and your comment. I'll start with you, Senator D'Alessandro, because she mentioned, among a number of other things, the Medicaid Enhancement Tax, which, if the courts continue to rule as they have, could open up a big budget hole. And does that then raise the urgency around your proposal?
Well, I don't think there's any question that there's urgency. The MET tax has been declared unconstitutional by two courts. So the state will, of course, appeal. I think the Supreme Court will couple those two cases together and will make a decision. But, yes, when you're looking at a couple of $100 million, some of which is in the general fund, has been turned over to the general fund, you got a problem. You know, it's I can remember Tom Hanks, Houston, we've got a problem.
Representative Lovejoy, essentially the question she's asking is, if not gambling to provide revenue for some of these services and some of these programs, where do you find the money? Where do you find put the math together?
New Hampshire's budget is always a challenge. We always have to allocate based upon the revenues that we have and what we see as our perceived needs. I do want to go back to a minute on the Medicaid Enhancement Tax. The Medicaid Enhancement Tax issue is going to have to be dealt with long before there would be any potential casino money. We are looking at this fall whether or not hospitals will be paying the Medicaid Enhancement Tax that's due in October. We are going to need to deal with this issue soon. When you look at Massachusetts signed, the governor signed their casino bill in November of 2011. It's now late April of 2014. They haven't issued the license yet. They're still a ways from issuing a license and a long ways from having a casino up and running and money coming in. So I think the Medicaid enhancement tax is a big issue, but it's separate from the casinos. We are going to need to deal with that long before there would be any potential casino money.
Well, I agree we're going to have to deal with the Medicaid enhancement tax because it's front and center. With her references to Massachusetts, we're not Massachusetts. You know, we did reinstitute the first lottery in the United States in 1963, and we had many of the same complaints by people, particularly members of the House, in 1963 when Governor John King signed the lottery bill. Yet we didn't have any apprehension about celebrating the 50th anniversary of the lottery here in New Hampshire. So, you know, things should be looked at in context. Massachusetts has created a commission. I mean, they created a damn bureaucracy to deal with this. You talk about nonsense. They created a commission, paid those commissioners $150,000 a year. One of them has had to declare himself in conflict because of the land sale in Everett. My goodness gracious, if you're following that situation, that's a drama. That's a drama in progress. And actually, those who want the casino have asked the chairman of the commission to recuse himself because he has a conflict with regard to the issuing of a license. We haven't had those kind of problems in New Hampshire. I think we could deal with this straightforward. We could get it done. We could get it done well. We've spent a lot of time and a lot of effort. I've spent 16 years of my life on this particular piece of legislation. Again, iteration after iteration after iteration, and hopefully the iterations have improved the quality of the piece of legislation. But to compare us to Massachusetts, I think, is false. That's a false premise, and I don't think it should be brought up.
Let's take another comment from our audience. Matthew is calling from Milford. Hi, Matthew. You're on the Exchange.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to talk about the, I guess, more of a philosophical question about expanded gambling. I mean, anyone can look at the statistics and see the social impact of gambling, also the regressive nature of the revenue that comes in from gambling. But my question is I'm a native of New Hampshire, and I'm not sure where the good senator is from or anything, but we've always had a pride of doing things kind of our own way in an intelligent way here in New Hampshire and in a way that's cutting edge. And I'm asking, why do we have to continually, for the last 16 years, fall in line and into this race to the bottom mentality that Senator D'Alessandro wants to take us down? Now, the people have spoken in this state for 16 years about expanded gambling. Senator D'Alessandro was quoted by the union leader as saying, we needed a combination of expanded gambling and other revenue to get us into economic responsibility. And all he's put forward is expanded gambling. I'm challenging him to come up with some new ideas or get out of the way so that somebody else can come up with the ideas that are more in line with the philosophies of New Hampshire.
Okay, Matthew, thanks for the call. I'm going to guess that Senator D'Alessandro would not use the phrase race to the bottom to describe expanded gambling. But about that concern that hear, that this is looking backwards and that maybe we need some new ideas to create revenue?
I am open to any new ideas. I've said that on many occasions. This is an idea that I brought forward. If other people have new ideas, please bring them forward. Bring them to the legislature. I've no opposition to that at all. And I think, again, the listener, incorrectly puts the deal together. This is an idea. It's an idea that I think has merit. It's an economic recovery job creation package. It's something that has merit. Look at it. It's happened in Maine. Oxford is now up and running, and I look at the television ads for Oxford, and they seem to be doing okay. So, again, if anyone has a better idea or another idea, please bring those ideas forward and bring them now so that they can be part of the discussion. I'm willing to listen to any proposals. I think I have an open mind on this situation, and I'm very happy to entertain any proposals.
Representative Lovejoy, what about that phrase, race to the bottom?
The caller made a very good point about it being the regressive nature of gambling. Many times when people think of casino gambling, they think of the old Las Vegas style. Back then, when the only casinos were really in Las Vegas, the people who gambled were wealthier than the average American because you had to fly there. You had to have the expense of going there. Now that casinos are everywhere – the average person gambling is of lower than average income level. Seniors are making up the largest, it's the fastest growing component of gambling is seniors. More than 50% of all gamblers now are 50 or over. If I took a field trip up to Oxford, you go up there and it's not a young crowd. So the casinos are really preying on our most vulnerable. The majority of the income from a casino comes from the slot machines. 90% of the revenue from a casino comes from slots, and 40 to 60% of the revenue from slots comes from people who have problem gambling issues.
Matthew, thank you for your call. And Steve Norton, since you have studied this, I wanted to ask you a little bit about how not only a casino generates its income from whom, but how that also then translates into potential state revenue and how that changes over time as Maine puts in a casino, as Massachusetts works toward installing casinos, and as we have casinos in Connecticut and Rhode Island, which are not quite as close, but still within the reach of a Granite State to get to for the day and come back.
Yep. The work we did back for the Gaming Commission and then last year identified for, you know, a prudent legislator, what is it that drives the revenue and social costs for the state? And we really identified four areas. One, the size, the gravity of the facility really matters and has a big impact. And two, location really matters from a revenue generation perspective and also from an economic impact perspective. The bigger the population, the more likely it is that you're going to have revenue. The more likely that you are close to another state, the more likely you bring in revenue from another state. Three, competition is going to happen. There's no market in the country that when they've introduced a casino, there haven't been other actions which materially impact the revenue that a state has experienced. This happened in Rhode Island. It's happening in Connecticut now with Massachusetts. It's happening with Delaware. And then the final piece that we looked at is that there are social implications to introducing casinos. There's a general agreement that, you know, approximately 2% of the population has problem gaming issues. And that's no longer really up to debate. The debate is how you deal with that. And I think Senator D'Alessandro's bill, the work that Richard, Representative Ames, has done, tried to meet some of those obligations in the legislation. So we're going to see in any introduction of expanded gambling lots of changes. And over time, the revenue source is likely to diminish, both as the market evolves and as people's spending behavior changes. Timing. Is one piece that we talked about here in Massachusetts and Maine. When are we likely to see this revenue? In Maine, it took 5 years after the passage to introduce slots, and it took another 2 years for the revenue to actually come in as expected originally. So I think this is not an immediate revenue source for the state. The license fee obviously would be, but from a sustainable budgeting perspective, you're looking off, you know, not this next biennium, but probably the biennium after that.
The exchange phone number is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Since Steve mentioned it, Senator D'Alessandro, I wanted to mention about the social costs, because that's always a concern, and there are provisions in the bill to try to deal with those. Yes. Governor Hassan has said, we're going to see those because of our proximity to states which already have casinos or are building them. This is a way to bring some of the money back to deal with those, put some revenue into programs instead of that money going out of state.
Well, that's a good point. We do put money aside for the social costs. And by the way, there may be a perception around here that people don't gamble today here in New Hampshire, in beautiful New Hampshire. Well, let me tell you something. Those social amenities, those social problems, they're here as we speak. We have charitable gaming in New Hampshire as we speak. It's a $100 million a year business. That's some people's estimate. Some people say it's almost a $200 million a year business. And we don't put anything aside to deal with those things as we speak. And as a matter of fact, we have had bills in the House to increase the amount of a bet on charitable gaming. The House just passed Keno. Now, there's something that I think is quite interesting. You get a big vote for Keno in the House, and they're opposed to expanded gaming, and they vote for Keno. Is that a paradox, Representative Lovejoy? You vote for Keno, but you're against expanded gaming?
I cannot explain that vote for Keno. I have to admit that that took me by as much surprise as it may have taken you. We talk about, do we have gambling here in New Hampshire? Yes. But what we don't have is slots. That is the big difference with a casino. It is the slots that are highly addictive. When you look at the problem gambling rates for any other type of gambling, it's nowhere near close to what it is with slots. The slots are designed to keep you at the machine, to put you in basically a trance-like state, so you will just keep gambling. You will gamble until you've run out of the money that you planned to gamble that day, or even more, you go get money out of your credit card to gamble more. Gambling problems are really, really significant with the slots.
But do you see that that we already have? Do you see, as the governor has mentioned and as Senator D'Alessandro has mentioned, that we're already seeing the residual effects of that because Granite Staters are coming to these other casinos, these other facilities, and so this is a way to do something through our own state budget, bring in that revenue to address it rather than just see the social costs without any of the potential benefits?
Our social costs will go up very significantly. When you look at studies about problem gambling, proximity matters. If you live within 10 miles of a casino, your chances of having problem gambling are really significantly higher. And right now, we don't have any Granite Staters that live within 10 miles of a casino. So we do have problem gambling here, and we don't spend any money for problem gambling. This bill does put money into problem gambling for those that are seeking help. Less than 10% of the people with problem gambling seek help. So those social costs are out there in the communities. Problems with suicide are twice as high with gambling addiction than they are with any other form of addiction. Those have repercussions. Those have cost in our communities.
This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. We're taking a look at what's in the cards for expanded gambling after a number of unsuccessful attempts to pass a casino bill. Supporters are hoping this version of the measure might finally have a winning hand. After a short break, we'll take more of your comments and questions. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio.
This is New Hampshire Public Radio, 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, a dying father takes his 10-year-old son on their last road trip together, and the mother is left to deal with her grief. The latest novel by one of Latin America's most respected young writers.
Also coming up on the Diane Rehm Show, the booming business of legalized marijuana and the ongoing health concerns. That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from you, our listeners, and support also comes to us from Geriatric Psychiatry Services at Frisbee Memorial Hospital in Rochester, specializing in mental and behavioral health for people 65 and older in outpatient or inpatient settings, frisbeehospital.com. And Sullivan and Hollis, providing effective representation for estate planning, domestic relations, and family-owned businesses throughout New Hampshire. It's 9:40. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Brady Carlson. Tomorrow on The Exchange, we'll hear stories from Vietnam veterans who went to Dartmouth. Today, we're looking at expanded gambling and the latest proposal to license casinos in the state. Join us now with your thoughts. Call in at 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. You can find us on Twitter or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. We have a number of callers waiting with their comments and questions. Bruce is calling from New London. Hi, Bruce. You're on The Exchange.
Hello. Good morning. Okay. Have I got you?
You got us.
Okay. Your discussion has turned exactly to what I wanted to speak to. And that is about concerns being raised about the social cost for any gambling. I find it interesting that over the years, no one discusses what might be social concerns if a baseball team comes to town, a hockey team, a concert venue. I can, if you name any form of entertainment, I know someone who spends money on that entertainment that might otherwise go to pay their rent, their mortgage, or their food bills. You name an entertainment, and people are there spending money for baseball games, hockey games, car races, concerts, on and on and on and on.
Thank you for that comment. Bruce, Representative Lovejoy, I would mention one of the arguments that you hear, when we talked about the idea that the House supported Keno, but has thus far opposed casino gambling. But you do hear from people who talk about the state takes in an awful lot of money from liquor taxes, and there's addiction involved with that. And if the House and Senate were to go along with a recreational marijuana bill someday, that would be a considerable amount of revenue, and yet casinos would be off the table. What do you make of that argument, the idea that there are legal things that people can do in this state that have social costs too?
New Hampshire does get a lot of their income from sin taxes, both cigarettes and liquor. We had in previous bills that a certain percentage of the revenue from liquor sales was going to go into dealing with people who had alcohol problems. That lasted for 1 year. And the state does not have a very good track record of putting money into helping addiction and to bring in another form of addiction that is not really going to bring us significant revenue. When you take out all of the places that money is going to be sent to, there's not, and you take out the social cost and all of the cost of running the various agencies that we need to have associated with gambling. From the last bill with one casino, you're looking at about $50 million with 2,000 slots, which is what the consultants say you would most likely begin with, and whether or not you'd ramp up to 2,500, which is what they said would probably be your high, is anybody's guess, especially once Massachusetts has their casinos. $54 million is not going to go a long ways when you're putting $25 million now into revenue sharing. There's not a lot of other money left. So to introduce a new form of social cost, because the slots are a new form of social cost, and they have very significant social costs to them, to me, doesn't make sense.
Senator D'Alessandro, part of the process of trying to win support for a casino bill and has involved the idea of putting money into a pot for addiction programs, yes, and putting money into a pot for aid to towns, and putting money into an education fund. Is there then potentially enough revenue left over for the state to do well, or does there come a point that it doesn't wind up being feasible?
Well, I think it's very feasible, and I think there is enough revenue to do what we want done. I've never said that expanded gaming is the be-all and end-all. It isn't. It's a component. It's a component. And when you look at the dollars that – let's talk about the dollars that expanded gaming would generate. Representative Lovely talked about the $450 million investment that has to be made, exclusive of the land, $450 million to build an entity out. That creates jobs for plumbers, for laborers, electricians, building trades. Those jobs will be created. That takes and turns revenue around and gets it going in the community. I think that's a real plus for us. But I have never said that this is the panacea. What it is it's one ingredient in an economic pie that allows us to move forward. Remember, we had racing at Rockingham Park for 100 years. At one time, the revenues from Rockingham Park made up 5% of the operating budget of the state of New Hampshire. All right, we don't have horse racing anymore at Rockingham Park. There's a change that's taken place. You have to adapt to this change. This expanded gaming is one of those adaptations to the changes that are taking place in our society. Representative W. said 50 and over. We have a lot of retirees. A lot of them are women. There's no question about that. They like to go and play the slots. They play them very judiciously. They have a certain amount of money. They go, they play, they either win or they lose. But they've got to have something to do, and we send buses south on a daily basis because people want this as a recreational situation. All of those things are in place as we speak. But I think when you look at the economic benefits, they're a positive. The property tax revenue that would be generated. Currently, the nothing that's at Rockingham Park, we don't have the racing, we do have charitable gaming, they pay about $800,000 in property taxes to the town of Salem. If a venue were constructed there, and if you had a $450 million investment, the property taxes would be $1.2, $1.3, maybe $1.5 million. So I think that there are positives. Listen, with everything, there's a downside risk. And of course, the problems that ensue have to be taken care of and have to be dealt with. And we put money aside to do that. And we don't do any of that today. That's something we don't do today. And as I said, we have charitable gaming. There is charitable gaming in this state every day. Every day, 365 days a year. At how many locations? How many locations? Maybe 15, 20, 25, 30. Who knows how many locations? So that's happening on a daily basis as we speak, and the state gets little, if anything, out of that.
Steve Norton, I wanted to take a moment to look at the economic cost benefit. How much economic activity is then generated by the casino? And then also, there's a term that you've used in your research, substitution. And so I wanted to ask a little bit about those factors as well.
Certainly. From an economic development perspective, the senator's absolutely right. When you put $450 million into a community, it has an impact. It would have an impact. And this legislation is different in that it requires that investment in order to get a license. So there is that piece. But the question about long-term economic development is a different one because the jobs that are created by these types of facilities are generally not high-wage jobs. They're generally retail-like jobs. So absolutely, there's a big infusion of resources. Long-term, there are additional jobs, and when you have an unemployment rate, you want those jobs available, but they're not the high-paying jobs that that one thinks of or one might hope for. With respect to the substitution effect, I think no one questions that Salem would benefit from a casino from an economic perspective, or New London, or the Loudoun. The question is more, what happens to those communities around them? For example, what happens to Manchester if Salem expands or creates a venue for gambling? What happens to their economic activity? What happens to Concord's economic activity when people are spending money in Loudoun as opposed to Concord? So I think the question is a complicated one and depends on the community that you're talking about and the question that you're really asking.
Let's take another call. Dwight is joining us from Wolfboro. Hi, Dwight. You're on the Exchange.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. Things I'd like to say briefly. Number one, I think it's ironic that all the conservatives in New Hampshire have always traditionally denied the folks what they want, and yet they never come up with any kind of plausible increase of revenue possibilities themselves. They always leave it to someone else. And then secondly, I'm 61 years old now, and I'm kind of tired of having everyone legislate morality for me. If I want to go to a gambling casino, I will. I have never gone to a gambling casino, but if I want to, I'll just go to Massachusetts. I don't need the state of New Hampshire telling me I'm not going to go. And the same thing with marijuana or whatever. It's a revenue source. A vast majority of people use marijuana regularly in the state. We have all kinds of other sins that so-called sins that people imbibe in, such as alcohol, tobacco, and gambling online and in other places. And basically, I think it boils down to a morality thing. I think that the legislature is trying to dictate morality to our citizens. And I think for that reason, it ought to be put out to vote for every citizen that votes and not left up to the legislature.
Dwight, thanks for your call. I wanted to also mention that a state representative, Michael Cahill, sent us a message who said that he supported expanded gambling because we need to meet the revenue to meet the needs of New Hampshire residents. Charity gaming and our state lottery are already in place with no obvious problems. He says marijuana would cause more trouble than gaming and would not be the free money solution New Hampshire craves. So a couple of different perspectives on that. I wanted to also mention the prospect of entertainment, since Senator D'Alessandro, Steve Norton talked about what's the potential effect on Manchester. And I know one of the concerns that the officials at the Palace Theater said is they were concerned that if casinos started to come into southern New Hampshire that there might be a problem with facilities. I know there's language in the bill talking about limiting the size and scope of a facility. But what about that effect outside of Salem or wherever a casino might end up?
Well, I think we have protection for Manchester, for the Verizon, for the Palace Theater, and for the Capital Center for the Arts here in Concord by limiting the size of the venue. People go to a gaming facility for one particular type of entertainment. They go to the Palace Theater and to the Concord Theater for a different type of entertainment. I don't think there's a conflict there. I think it's all an enhancement. It all drives off one another, and they help one another as we move forward. I mean, if you're going to go to a baseball game, you're going to go to a baseball game. If you're going to go to a hockey game, you're going to go to a hockey game. If you're going to go to a gaming facility, you're going to go to a gaming facility. So I think that negates that situation. And really, over the last few years, what we have to do, or what we have had to do, is negate every one of these conflicts. The first conflict was, if you only had one, then you would eliminate competition. So now we have two, and we create competition. The other situation, well, you don't distribute the money to all of the people in the state of New Hampshire. It just goes to a few. So we present another proposal that says we'll reintroduce revenue sharing so everybody in New Hampshire shares in it. So every time there's a concern, we address the concern. Representative Ames addressed the concerns about how do you regulate this. And we had a whole commission study for a lengthy period of time as to how we regulate. So we've addressed that. I think every time there's a complaint, we have tried to address it with either a commission or a change in the legislative process. So I don't know how long this is going to go on. I have a life expectancy that I think I'm in the 80s now because all of the modern medicine has taken me forward. So having dealt with this since my early years, I hope that by the time I leave this earth, we will have accomplished something along these lines. So my life expectancy grows, and I hope I can deal with each problem as it comes up, because that's what good legislation is all about.
Well, I think the individuals have limited entertainment dollars. If you spend your dollars in the casino, then you are not going to be spending your dollars at the Fisher Cats or at the Capital Center for the Arts. People have a limited number of entertainment dollars, except for the very wealthy. And it's not the very wealthy that's gambling in these casinos. We talked about limiting the size of the venue. That does protect the Verizon, but it does not protect the other areas. Concord Center for the Arts would be, the Capital Center for the Arts, excuse me, would be competing for the same types of acts that would be at a 1,500-seat auditorium at the casino, say, in Salem. An act like Cosby is not going to do both of those. There is a provision that they need to have some type of agreement, but they cannot force the talent to go to more than one place. Each of the places, such in Portsmouth, Keene, Concord, have all felt that they will be very negatively impacted. And these agreements are only for not-for-profits. So a place like Club Casino, which has nothing to do with gambling, despite its name, on Hampton Beach, is, according to the the chamber said, it's second only to the Sun as to bringing people to Hampton Beach. It significantly extends the season. They would not have any protections, and they have come and testified and believe that within 2 years of a casino being in place with a 1,500 venue, that they would be out of business.
But coming back to something Dwight said in his comment, essentially that if he wants to go to a casino, what business is it of the legislature if he would rather do that than, say, go to the Fisher Cats or go to a theater?
And there's casinos going to be in Massachusetts, and you can go to Maine. There are casinos around.
Here she's implying that he would have to spend all of that gas money to go to Massachusetts. So that the imposition of that certain criteria that he would have to fulfill in order to gamble. Look, I think this boils down to this. You're either for this or you're against it. You can think of 1,000 reasons to be opposed to it. You can think of that many reasons to be for it. I think we've come down to this in this particular juncture. you're either for expanded gaming or you are against expanded gaming. I would like the issue debated in that context. You're either for it or you're against it. It has pluses, it has minuses. Articulate the pluses, articulate the minuses, and then vote on that basis. And let's move forward. You know, we do this occasionally in the legislature when we actually boil it down to you're either for it or you're against it. And hopefully we can make some progress. But I have my friend up north, Johnny Gallus, who's worked with me on this for a number of years, and I know he's listening. And, John, I did my best. That's all I can say. I did my best. That's all I can give you. I'm giving you my best shot on this great, great American Day.
Very quickly, I'll just ask each of you, the Ways and Means Committee in the House is set to vote on this. Any prediction, Representative Lovejoy?
I believe it'll come out the same as it did last month.
No change.
I don't think there'll be a change, but whether there is, it will then be up to the floor of the House. So the House Ways and Means will be voting on it tomorrow, and then it'll go to the full House the following Wednesday on the 30th is what we expect in the schedule.
And very quickly, just a couple of seconds, any change, Senator D'Alessandro?
Well, I always hope and pray for the best. That's all I can do. I live with hope. Hope springs eternal.
Any thoughts there, Steve Norton?
Just from our perspective, it's great to see that facts and information are being used in the debate.
Well, thanks. Big thank you to each of you for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. It's been great.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is James Pouliot. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields. I'm Brady Carlson in for Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, Tales from the Vietnam War, as told by members of the Dartmouth College Class of 64. In a new book, these veterans relate their experiences from jungle combat to the dullness of desk duty. They also reflect on the debate over the war at home and on its legacy today. We talk with the book's editor and veterans whose stories are included. Send us your thoughts by email or Facebook, and join us for The Exchange tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. on NHPR.
Diane Rehm Show next at 10 on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our listeners, and from Company C. Introducing its new organic bedding in fresh designs and colors, 100% Company C color, 100% organic. Retail store in Concord and at CompanyC.com. And from the University of New Hampshire Online Master of Social Work program, now accepting applications for August admission, mswonline.unh.edu.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord, 89.1.
WEVS Nashua, 88.3.
WEVH Hanover, 91.3.
WEVN Keene, 90.7.
WEVC Gorham, 107.1.
WEVJ Jackson, 99.5.
WEVF Colebrook, 90.3.
And WEVQ Littleton, 91.9.
And online at nhpr.org.
AMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Across the country, attitudes toward legalizing marijuana have shifted, and state legislators are responding. While no other states have gone as far as Washington and Colorado, where marijuana sales are legal, many are moving to decriminalize the drug or make it available for medical use.